Thank you. Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm a grateful alcoholic and a member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
It's good to be here with you guys. And tonight we're going to be talking about the second part of step three, which I like to call 3.2. And it's made a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. And tonight when I looked over and I saw James, and James saw that Russell wasn't up here, and he was trying to figure out how he could get from the back of the room into the front of the room with nobody noticing, he made a decision just to turn his life and his will over to the care of God. And that's what we're going to speak a little bit about that tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you for all the guys from the West Side Men's Group coming out to support a member. I appreciate that. And nice. I am a little nervous tonight, and which is uncharacteristic of me. It's not like I don't speak a lot in public. I do. We have a meeting that's this size every Wednesday. But when Russell called, Russell's my sponsor, and when he called on Thursday and said, I'd like you to take the meeting, and then I said, let me call and ask Wendy and Jimmy and Owen, and they said yes. You know, usually it takes, I'm already built up to speed by step three when I'm doing the steps here. And also in my mind, I'm thinking, well, the people that come to the 12-step house to hear me, they're coming to hear me. But then I knew that James was going to be here and a couple of people going to be coming here to Russell. They heard how amazing he was. And, well, you got me tonight, the understudy. But I'm glad to be here. Last week was just an amazing week for me here at the 12-step house with Russell. That was probably the best third step that I had ever heard in my entire life. I don't know if you agree with that, Wendy, but it was just amazing. Amazing. And I realized that the why of why we turn our life and our will over to the care of God was so carefully and wonderfully and excitedly explained last week. But the how, which is what I always call the 3.2 of step three, the how is something that is not as easy for some of us on how to turn our life and our will over to the care of God. Most of us in here, I would say, believe in God. Most of us in here actually come in with some type of belief with God. But how to continue to turn our life and our will over to the care of God is something else. How do we tap into that power? How is it on a regular work day where we wake up and we get into our lives and we get into our day and most of us go to work? I mean, some of us go to work and then we come home, some of us have children. Where does God fit into all that? How do we make time for Him? How in a busy morning when we're usually running late, how are we going to make time for God? I've found over the years that I've been here is that the times that I don't make time for God is usually the times when my day just doesn't go well. Now I know that God will make time for me anytime. But it's when I seek Him that He meets me. And it's an active participation in a relationship, which we're going to talk about. For those of you that don't know who I am or anything about my story, I grew up in the 12-step house. I came here when I was 22 years old. I joined a home group in the back room, which was called the 11-step group. And I stayed there for 7 years. And that's where I met Wendy and a lot of people from here. And I had a sponsor, his name was Myron. And then I had another sponsor, his name was John Williams. I've always had multiple sponsors. I've always had a team of experts that I needed to have deal with me. This time around, I had two sponsors. I had Russell, which hopefully you guys will come back next week to hear, who's just an amazing speaker, an amazing person, a person that had taught me everything that I know about my present-day spirituality, my relationship with God, and actually mentioned the Bible in the first meeting that I was at when I was just a couple hours sober. Then I had another sponsor up until recently. His name is Jerry, And those of you that have been in my step series know that he lives out in California, also a Jewish man. I've never had a non-Jewish sponsor in my entire life. I came in when I was 22, I had a Jewish sponsor. And then Myron was a Jewish sponsor. Then Russell's a Jewish sponsor. And then I have another guy, Jerry's a Jewish sponsor. And my Lord and Savior is a Jewish sponsor. So, I mean, I'm just following Jews my entire time. Also, my dad's Jewish, and I grew up half Jewish and half Italian. Yeah, so guilt on both sides of the family. Praising the Lord on Fridays and passing the matzah on Saturdays. So I had a lot of spirituality, and I didn't. You know, I really didn't. I had both worlds. You know, sometimes my family was all out in church, and other times it wasn't. There was times when I remember people coming over to the house when I was 12 and praying over me, and then my parents grew out of that. So we had church years, then we had Atlantic City years. Those were definitely the non-church years. My dad was one of the biggest gamblers in Atlantic City at the time. He had gotten involved with a Chinese syndicate. Not that he was in the syndicate, but they were playing at the same table that he was on, and there was limits to the table, and so my dad was the only white player in an all-Chinese table, and they all put their money on him. And the next thing I know, we were going there for 7 years. Limousines and helicopters and jets, and here we are, this white middle-class family from Long Island. I would come home from high school and there would be a limousine sitting in the driveway jetting us off to jets, and we had no money. It was hysterical. So there was the church years, and then there was the Atlantic City years, which were definitely not the church years, and then it was my drug addiction. And then everything changed. I want to say that in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, we make this distinction between drugs and alcohol, and there's a reason. My first drug that I ever tried was alcohol, and my last drug that I ever tried was alcohol, because that's all I had in the house. And there's this thing in my home group where they call drugs super alcohol. I'm not sure exactly where that term came from. I checked the big book. I don't see anything about super alcohol in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I say the word drugs because that's what I did, and out of respect for Bill W., I don't say it a lot because he didn't speak about drugs until page 7 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then once again on page 9 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and 30 other places in the Big Book. So they said they do mention drugs. But when I'm at the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, because out of respect for the singleness of purpose, because that's what you guys taught me, which I still don't understand, I don't talk about it that much. But we were at step 3 tonight. Now, last week, it was just amazing. Russell spoke about that God is the same yesterday, today, as he is tomorrow. That at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you're all by yourself, and the tapes are going off like they were in my mind last night, the tapes are going off, the tapes are going off, the tapes are going off telling you you're no good, you never amount to nothing, nobody wants to listen to you. You're a fool. You're a fake. You can't feel him. The presence of God. He hasn't gotten anywhere. He didn't go anywhere. And that's when we get to seek him. And we get to develop that relationship. You know, this is Mason and Eddie. You guys that know me know that we were in a halfway house together almost 9 years ago now. With Brian in the back and Les and little Brian over there was sponsoring the entire house, and we're all still traveling together. We're all still traveling together. We're all still listening to each other. We're still all supporting each other. The reason for that is because we're trying not to run our own lives. You know, if I would have came here tonight and this is a whole separate subject, but if I would have came here tonight and I was expecting to see Russell, and I looked up and there wasn't Russell and there was me. There was a lot of times in my life, James, the truth of the matter is I would have been really disappointed. I mean, like, seriously disappointed. But I stay anyway. Because I made a decision when I came in this time to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. And what that means is me not running my show. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about will in a second. So I'm in the back room at the 11-step group, and I'm growing up. I'm 22. I'm 23. I'm 24. I'm watching all these people come in. I watch Wendy get married, and I watch all these people, and I see them, and I'm like, this is how you grow up. Then I watch people die. Then I watched people get divorced. I watched this lady with many, many years, Ruth Rogers. I see her die in the group, and I see people not picking up. And I learned how to be sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never learned how to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. I was running with this crowd that believed as long as we were sober, we could do anything we wanted to do. And I hung out with those type of guys. And we did things that we shouldn't have sober. I did things that I'm embarrassed about sober. I cheated on my then girlfriend sober. I fist fight in Alcoholics Anonymous sober. As a matter of fact, the gentleman that let me speak here tonight, Owen, I was in the Pompano Big Book meeting, and we're having this spiritual meeting, and it was actually with Steve. We're in this meeting, and I didn't like what Steve and Tom were talking, and I went up to them, and we're talking about God, and John Williams is talking about God, and we're all talking about God, and I'm like, God, yeah, this is crazy, and then I didn't like what one of the guys was saying, and I went up to him, and he didn't like what I was saying, and we started fist fighting in the middle of Pompano Big Book meeting. And Owen was there and broke it up between me and Steve. And that's the way I conducted myself inside Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a rebel without a cause. But I was sober. As long as I'm sober. As long as I don't pick up. Yeah, but I did every other sin that there was under man. Even stuff, I did more sin inside AA than before AA because I didn't even know it existed until you guys told me in meetings. You're like, I'm having a problem with that. I'm like, how does that go? How do you do that? What do you mean you're having a problem with that? I didn't even know that existed. And so here I am inside the program, and I'm acting just like a Tasmanian devil. And I'm fist, now you can imagine if I'm fist fighting in AA, what I'm doing outside of AA. You know, it wasn't a behavior where if I was the only big book that you ever saw, I'm not saying you would rush into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with and say, I want what he has. But I was sober, physically sober. And I'm running around and I'm doing all this type of behavior and I'm like this Tasmanian devil and then I break my foot and then I take a pill for my foot, which was prescribed. And as soon as that pill hit my system, I knew what I was missing. I was missing prescription pills and going to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had figured out the perfect solution because instead of me running around Alcoholics Anonymous misbehaving and wanting to fight you and hating what you had to say, I would take pills and then I would go to the meeting and you guys sounded so much better. I was like, wow, this meeting has gotten so much better since I came back from my broken foot. You guys are awesome. Wow. I remember one time I took Wendy outside and I said, Wendy, I'm not addicted to these pills, they're prescribed, but is there a way that I could get off them if I needed to? She said, is it possible you have a problem? Well, somehow I thought that I was still sober during that 5-month period of taking pills that were prescribed, picked up my 7-year medallion, went over to get some Chinese food, order a glass of wine. I hadn't had alcohol in my system in 7 years. Never had a problem with alcohol. Never yearned for alcohol. At college, I didn't want alcohol. I took the other stuff, always. As soon as I took that first drink, I fell in love with alcohol. I became what the big book says is a real alcoholic. Anybody ever said that to you? Are you a real alcoholic? Yeah, I'm a real alcoholic. What does that mean, are you a real alcoholic? Well, I'm a real alcoholic. I don't know if there's anything other than real alcoholics in here. I think you'd probably go someplace else on a Tuesday night than the 12-step house, but I'm a real alcoholic. But I never thought of myself as a real alcoholic. Inside the 11-step group, and because of the respect of people like John that I've been following for all these years, and Maury, and Wendy, and Myron, you guys introduced yourself as alcoholics, so I introduced myself as an alcoholic. I was doing the alcoholic and addict, and someone said I had to put $2 in the basket. So I just called myself an alcoholic. But I never really believed that I was an alcoholic because if you look back over my life, I didn't have an alcohol problem. Well, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself because as soon as I took that drink, I became a big book, real alcoholic. And I was starting to pass by Walgreens and I couldn't pass by Walgreens anymore. My car would drive into Walgreens. And I was, you know, one thing that I had romanticized when I was out there, and I know we're going to get back to the third step. Usually I have 11 weeks to clean up all this mess that I make in the first 20 minutes, but... yeah, but it was something else I wanted to tell you before. I looked at Steve, and then I knew he was judging me, and then I got all messed up. Steve is my built-in judger. He's like the id in my ecosystem, and he'll let me know how many times I paused during the meeting tonight. So that just threw me off right there. That's the benefit of being in a home group that lets you know about yourself at all times. Just in case you start getting an ego, they crush it as soon as they see you. So I don't know where I was with that. It was, I know Walgreens, but it was something. Oh, so while I was sober, before I started to misbehave like an animal in outside in the streets sober, I got into cigar smoking. And I was reading Cigar Aficionado. And in Cigar Aficionado, they always have a person smoking a cigar and then has a cognac. And there's always a beautiful woman in the room somehow. I don't know how that works. She wants to smell the cigar smoke. But anyway, it's always in that magazine. So I started reading Cigar Aficionado, and I saw myself as this cognac drinking, fine cigar smoking, hot lady in the corner type of guy. And I started romanticizing that if I ever went out someday, that I would have a cognac. And I would be a fine wine guy, and I saw myself, I work in the swap shop, just to let you know. Just to show you how fine wine my tastes really run. But I somehow saw myself as a high-powered attorney in a three-piece suit, driving Jason's car, and with an attaché case. I saw myself with an attaché case and me sitting around the bar talking to you about worldly events and things that I don't know, like geography. And you would think I was intelligent. And so when I drank my first glass of wine, my first mission was to go to a bar and do that. But as soon as I drank cognac, I knew it wasn't for me. Not only wasn't I not a fine wine drinker, I'm more like a Thunderbird and Muscatel drinker. And so the experiment went terribly bad. And I became then instantaneously demoralized, addicted to a substance that I didn't think didn't have any power over me. And then I found out that I would drink any substance that had alcohol in it. During this time also, during my relapse, because there was new drugs out there in the 90s. Here I am now. I came when I was 22. Now I'm 32, and now I'm hanging out with guys like Luke in the clubs, and I'm doing this stuff, and I'm bouncing my head up and down all night long, and I'm getting all whacked on these new type of drugs that they have out there because I had never seen them, and my mind got frazzled. What I mean by my mind got frazzled is I couldn't even turn on the computer, and I work with computers. It took a long time living with you guys that I was even able to remember things. I did damage to myself during that 2-year relapse that was not only painful, but I still have residual effects in it today. Now, the Bible says that God will return with the locusts have stolen. I hope so. All I can do is stay sober one day at a time. During that time, it was very, very painful for me. I was in and out, in and out, in and out. And that's where I met Brian and these guys that I live with. And finally, I was able to put together a week staying in this halfway house. And then I relapsed again. I'm high on crack. And my dad and I said, listen, there's this guy in Russell, named Russell. And he's doing the steps right outside the treatment center that I just got kicked out of in Miami. I got kicked out for fist fighting. I know it's very shocking. And so he takes me down there, and I'm sober, like 4 hours. And I'm listening to Russell at the West Dixie Group, and he brings out a Bible in the AA meeting. Now, I've been in AA a while. You know, I've been in AA since I'm 22. Now I'm 34. I know you can't bring a Bible in AA. I mean, I've seen things that happen. People talk about Bible in AA, and it's going to be nasty. And I'm sober like a couple hours, so I'm actually ready for a good show. You know what I'm saying? So I'm thinking, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. And I look over at my dad, and I'm like, Dad, you can't do that. You know, my dad's sober, but he was only in GA at the time, and he didn't really know the rules. I'm like, Dad, he's about to break the rules. And Russell starts talking about God in a way that I had never heard before. And he's not embarrassed for his relationship with God. And he tells me something, and there's a room this size, and I think he's talking to me, and he says that we never apologize for our relationship with God. And that God has all the answers to our problems. Now, I didn't know if I believed that. All I know is that I had a lot of problems. I had just had a 6 felony car crash. My dad was driving me down to an AA meeting. I lived in a halfway house with Mason and Eddie. I mean, it wasn't the great scenario of my life. It's not where I thought I would wind up. So when I got to the place where, now with Jerry out in San Francisco, like I said, I've always needed a team of high-powered people. Right now I got Tony Otero and Eddie Murray that are my mentors. They're working with me. And then I got Russell as my sponsor. I always have a team of professionals around me. But at that time I flew out to San Francisco, and Jerry, this hardcore Jewish guy from Manhattan who really doesn't play, and he's like, listen, we're going to do the third step, and we're going to do it on our knees. And do you know the third step prayer? He'd been telling me to memorize the third step prayer for a while, but the way he said, do you know the third step prayer? And I knew I needed to memorize it. So that he told me tomorrow morning in the hotel room, we're going to do the third step prayer. And that night I studied. I did that third step prayer. Even though on the end of the thing it says it doesn't matter what the words were, Jerry didn't read that line in the big book where it said it doesn't matter what the words were. And he told me, you better know what those words are. So I studied the third step prayer. And that day he came into the hotel room and he said, we're going to do it on our knees. Now I don't know how they do it at the 12 step house. I don't know how you do it in the oldest group in Broward County. But I do it on my knees with Jerry. And he said, give me your hand. And he put my hand in his hand and he said a prayer. He said, God, help this young man to be honest. And then he said, Steve, do you want to say anything? And I said, yeah, what he said, God, I want to help me to be honest. And then we did the third step prayer. Now, before you do the third step prayer, you have to make a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. And it's so much more than what you're hearing about in the meetings. It's like the beginning of the rest of your life changing. And Luke, you have outside power come in and run your life. Not 3 frogs and they're sitting on a log. And then one of those frogs makes a decision to jump, and how many frogs are on there. That's great if you don't have serious mental issues like I did. But I needed an outside mind manager coming in. So Jerry didn't give me the 3 frogs on the log scenario. What he gave me is, I'm asking you if you want to turn your life and your will over to the care of God. And I said, I'm not sure if I want to turn my life and my will over to the care of God, Jerry. And he said, well, what is actually, do you think I just asked you? I said, you want me to turn my life and my will over? He said, well, what exactly are you holding on to, Steve? Tell me about your life. I said, well, I just came over from Mason and Eddie. We were living in a halfway house. On Friday nights, we all put our money together and we get the big stromboli over at the stromboli place. My wife gives me a certain amount of money to spend so much during the week on the little money card that she gave me. And I got a little part-time job at the swap shop. He said, and how's your will going? Because I see how your life's going. How's your will going? I said, well, my will, I'm here. You know, you asked me to come out to the West Coast, take a plane out here. I'm here. He said, well, how was it going before that? And I said, not so good. He said, well, so what I'm saying to you, Steve, is would you like to turn that life and that will over to the care of God? I said, I'm not sure. I was still holding on. I still wanted to hold on to that life and that will. I still thought that at any time someone was going to bust in the door, we're on our knees, and they were going to say, Jerry, stay away from that young man. I'd like to offer you a 6-figure job over at my company. Do not listen to that person. That man's a fool. Steve, you are not an... Nothing happened. So then he backed up a page because he realized he was going to have to be back up on a page, and this is what he said. He said, Steve, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. And the concept was the keystone. He stopped right there. Do you know what the keystone is, Steve? I said, I'm not really sure. He said, keystone is the thing that's in the middle of the building, and if it's not there, the whole thing's going to crumble down. That's your program. Do you want God to be the keystone of your program? I said, I think so. Most good ideas are simple, and the concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we pass to freedom. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? You know what, right there, when he said God either is or he isn't, what is our choice to be? To me, it was the most simple way that I had ever heard it. God either is or he isn't. What is our choice to be? He can't be semi-powerful. He can't be, you know, Russell alluded to it last week, and the word higher power is only mentioned 3 or 4 times in the entire big book, but the word God is mentioned over 416 times. You know, I'm not looking to sell out here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I spend way too much time. I go to 6 meetings a week, church on Sunday, a Bible study on Wednesday, prayer meeting on the Tuesday morning, when I can make it there, Doug, of course. And I got this whole week. I don't want to sell myself out for some higher power. I want to be hooked on to the highest power. Yeah. And when he says to me that God either is or he isn't, what is our choice to be? This is what I said, John. I said, I'm all in. God is. And I want him to take control of my life. He went on to the next page and he said, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened. When was the last time I had anything remarkable happen in my life at that point? Not much. He said, all sorts of remarkable things are going to happen in your life. Would you like that to happen, Steve? I said, listen, I'm looking for some remarkable. I could use some remarkable, James. I really could. I could use some remarkable. I had just destroyed my entire family. My mother and father were crying at the foot of my bed. I came down the stairs in my house and my grandfather, my 80-year-old Sicilian grandfather, says to me, you're high. And I wasn't high on the substance that I usually take. I was only taking pills. I don't know if you've ever met anyone in the program that just takes pills and thinks they're only not hot, they're sober. But there's a lot of people doing that. I was one of those people. I was only taking pills and my grandfather said to me, you're high. And I took him by his neck. And I held him in the air, and I said to him, I'm not high. That's the havoc I did to my family. So when Jerry said, would you like to have some remarkable things happen to you if you follow God? I said, I sure do. I could use some remarkable at this time of my life. And there's a line in the big book that says, that if we stayed close to God and performed his work well, that he'll take care of everything. The second line I just made up, but it's very close to that. If we stay close to God and performed his work well, he'll take care of everything. Let me get the line because I can see some people. Listen to this. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now, you're not going to hear that in the Just Stay Sober meetings. You're not going to hear that in the guys that I was hanging around. We were playing cards on Friday nights, fist fighting, doing stuff that we shouldn't do, and going to meetings and talking about God. You're not going to hear that in that group. But in the group that I hang out with now and the guys that I hang out with now, we talk about staying close to God and performing his work well. Men that I emulate, that are there before me, I stay close to them because they stay close to God. And when I'm not, I have guys in my life like Eddie that said to me, you know what, Steve, you're not staying close to God. And I'm going to tell you something, I have a whole spectrum of friends that I've given that privilege in my life to say to me, you know what, Steve, you're not staying close to God and you're not performing his work well. So how do you think that's going to show up? I've now given all the people that I love and respect inside Alcoholics Anonymous the privilege, my privilege, of talking into my life. I can't tell you how many times that Stevie D, when I've been off, and I said, listen, I'm never talking to that guy again. And Stevie D said, let's talk about it. I don't know about you, but I have alcoholism, which means I can cut you off, never speak to you again for the rest of my life, but it usually only lasts 30 minutes. I mean, you don't know how many times I have cut these two off, 150,000 times. Yesterday, I cut them both off. And they do the same thing to me. And a half an hour, we're like, what are you doing for dinner? I don't know, where are you going? I have alcoholism. You know, something else I want to say, because we're running out of time, is the 12 steps. The magic in the 12 steps is not the 12 steps. You hear people say, but that guy was working the steps and he went out. The magic is not in the 12 steps. There's a magic that comes from the 12 steps. There's an all-powerful flowing river on that side, and it's cascading down, and it fills you up, and you never want for anything, and you feel amazing, and you love on people, you want to do everything, and that's over there, and it's 12 steps to get to that. But don't fall in love with the steps. Falling in love with the steps is like falling in love with your car on the way to Orlando when the destination is Disney World. The steps are awesome, but it's not in and of itself a relationship with God. It allows you to clear away the wreckage on your glass so that the sunlight of the Spirit will shine through, but it's still not a relationship with God. You have to have a relationship with God to have a relationship with God, which means you have to work at it. If I only call you once a month or once a year, and I say, hey, Bennett, how you doing? That's not a relationship. I know you. But that's not a friendship. That's not a close. Every day I start off with this. Let me just do this real quick. There's three pages in the big book that I highly recommend if you're new, in the middle of your sobriety, at the end of your sobriety, or about to pass on in the next week. It's page 86, 87, and 88. These cannot be understated. When you wake up in the morning and the first thing, your eyes open up and you don't know what to do. You're not sure where your meditation book is. You're not sure if you want to read His Utmost for the Highest or your 12 and 12. By the way, if you get a 12 and 12. You need to have a 12 and 12. There's going to be times when you want to know what the St. Francis prayer is. You're going to go right to the 11th step in there. You get a 12 and 12. You don't have a 12 and 12. You're not have the whole program. You don't have all the tools. Get a 12 and 12. And I start off like this. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. We ask God to direct our thinking. Because my best thinking, when I'm on my knees and I'm praying to God and asking Him to keep me sober during the day, I've already started thinking about who I'm going to call while I'm on my knees. I'm always thinking, how's my bills? I need page 86 to focus me. Some of you other guys and gals in here have great meditation techniques. I don't. Okay, I'm actually a very seriously bipolar type of person, but only through the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and really, really working out my relationship with Him that I can stay off medication. And I don't say that to make a joke. I'm telling you the truth. My doctor said to me, you will always be on medication. And I was 3 years sober when she said that to me. Not brand new sober. She said to me, you will always need medication. And you know what? I always would have needed medication. But the great physician stays with me every day on that. That is not to say anything about medication. But in my life, it's very hard for me to focus. So I need a book that says, stay focused. This is what we do on awakening. Think about the 24 hours a day ahead. Next line. Oh, okay. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially ask that it be divorced of self-pity. I got that. Next line. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties because God gives us brains to use. And then all of a sudden, I start to connect myself with the almighty power and not Steve's power. You know, when I called Steve tonight, I said, you know, I'm not really feeling tonight. I'm not really feeling tonight. You know, to walk into the podium where Russell Spatz speaks. No, you may not get it, but it's daunting for me. It's overwhelming for me. I watched him do the steps and Paul Lee and different these men that are just so amazing to me since I was very young. So to come in here for one step was a little bit nerve-wracking tonight. You know what Steve and other guys told me? And they said, just stay out of his way. Stay out of God's way. As soon as you get in his way during the day, ask him to come into your life. Jerry Baer taught me a very simple prayer that I want to share with you. And it goes like this. God, please remove these bad thoughts from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Man, how simple. But he told me, he's like, listen, I got this prayer. And he's real Jewish. He teaches in yeshiva. So I thought it was like one of these secret prayers from the Talmud, you know, and he's going to bring it out. And he's going to have to put the special robe on. And I was going to have to bow in front of him. I'm like, Jerry, tell me, what's the prayer? And he turns around and he goes, God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Wow. You mean it's that simple? Yes. The big book says that God is not looking to make hard terms for those that seek Him. God is not looking to hide from us. He didn't create us to be hidden behind one rock Only one guy with a long beard can speak to him and not you? He created us to have a relationship with us. Why does Tim have two daughters? So that he can have a relationship with them. God wants to have a relationship with us. But I'm so self-involved doing my pagels, pride, anger, greed, gluttony, envy, lust, and sloth, and piling that on all the time, that I can't feel God. I'm either eating or doing or looking at something I shouldn't, and I'm not thinking about God. But when I bring God into that picture, and he helps me keep away from the pagels, the pride, the anger, the greed, the gluttony, the envy, the lust, and sloth, guess what? That pipeline opens up, and it's like, phew! Man, that's where you were. It's not like you ever went anywhere. You were always here. It's just that I got in the way. So Stevie said to me, he's like, stay out of the way. And you know, one of the last things I want to tell you that helps me is I listen to this incredible worship music. Now, my worship music may be different than your worship music. Mason listens to Jay-Z and Eminem. That's what his it's right. Girls, they're cheering in the back. My worship music has more of a different type of an effect. Find out what opens up the channel in your heart, the mantra in your heart. My friend Joel, he likes to meditate. The guy that you and Larry like, Emmett Fox, that wrote a book called Sermon on the Mount. He didn't write Sermon on the Mount, but he wrote a book about Sermon on the Mount. And find out what works for you. Find out what opens that channel. So when you're in the middle of the storm, because serenity is not peace from the storm, it's peace in the storm. The guys that I watch, like Jimmy, that goes through so much, and Tim, and the different people inside this group that I watch you guys go through it, and Rhonda B, that go through cancer and still show up at meetings, that go through wives being ill, still go to meetings, losing jobs, still go to meetings, divorce, still going to meetings, son going to jail, still going to meetings. Here I am talking about thumb-sucking baby crybaby sobriety. I don't want to go to meetings because the Yankees are playing. Speaking of which, where is Todd in the entire group? Probably the Yankees are playing. Yeah, the Yankees are playing, right? It's a thumb-sucking baby crybaby sobriety. The Yankees are playing. I don't want any of that. No, I'm just joking. Don't let him. Okay, it's an important game. It's an important game. Now, my sponsor called me last Thursday, which is the night of the West Side Men's Group. And he said, in the West Side Men's Group, it's important. That's our home group. We don't miss our home group. And he said to me, he's missing the home group because it's the opener for the NFL. And he loves Brett Favre. You know what I asked him? I said, do you have Brett Favre's number? He said, no. I said, you better get it when you have problems because don't call me.
I don't know. How about this? Steve Russell. Steve.